Welcome back, or should I say welcome to the 2024 season of the Cannonsball Podcast. We're back. The last episode was the Mariners preview, and I said likely wouldn't be another episode until like well after a week of opening day, and we're at essentially 1 week past opening day. This is be coming out on Friday, though. Recording this on Thursday on the Mariners off day, which was very convenient for me. Because these are the days I like to record anyway. So welcome back, everyone. The first episode of the 2024 season is here. And boy, the vibes are kind of on the floor right now for the Seattle Mariners. But I'm pretty hyped. Baseball is back. And we're in the weird time with talking about baseball. Like the month of April, just looking at baseball objectively. In the month of April is like all of the stats and the stuff and wins and losses. It all counts, but it almost all doesn't really matter in a way. I mean, you unless you crawl yourself in an insanely deep hole in April, generally you take April stuff with a grain of salt because you don't have as much of a sample to go off of, especially like looking at stats in April is just kind of a fool's errand. Like I think you can use them to inform you on what's happened, but not necessarily what's going to go on moving forward. Just a weird time to objectively talk about baseball. But this episode and probably the rest of these episodes in April and even at the start of May, I will definitely talk about Mariners stuff for at least half of the episode because that's the podcast. This is the Seattle Mariners. But there's also just other MLB stuff I like to talk about, especially because I like to focus on specific on-field stuff and stats later in the season again when they mean a little bit more. Instead of like talking about, you know, a guy's OPS plus after, you know, 15 plate appearances in the season. I'm not huge on doing that. So this episode 2 specifically is the first one of the season. I'm just going to riff. I have some stuff to talk about and I'll talk about the Mariners, but then I have some other just, you know, pressing MLB matters to talk about. Overall, the start of the season has been rocky for the Mariners. But before I say anything specific about their on-field play, I have to give it up and officially declare the Mariners media team, whatever it is, the media, marketing, creative, social team, whatever, they're back. They're absolutely back. They haven't been gone, per se, since the last Mariners advertisement aired, because I think the Mariners marketing team has been really good. Since then as well, just the stuff that they create and the stuff they do for social and to get fans engaged, I think they're really good at that. But the commercials are back. We were clamoring for it. The fans the past year have felt like this was a thing that had to come because they have this core of players that have been here for a little while now and will likely be here for a little while in the future. And so it's just a perfect opportunity for some Mariners ads. And they brought it back. The rollout to opening day, they tweeted out like one or two ads a day that they've made. I'm sure they have plenty more that are going to come out this year. Some really good ones. If you haven't, go check them out. I mean, Julio did an ad with Ichiro about the no-fly zone, which is pretty great. I think that's the best one so far. But I gotta say that off rip, they're absolutely fucking back. Like those ads, inject it. I love the Mariners ads, and they were good. They were good ads. There's Big Dumper ad. That was great. I'm hyped that the ads are back. Okay, now I guess I'll talk about the Mariners on-field play. Speaking objectively about baseball through a more thoughtful lens here, it's, you know, they're 3-4. It's when this is coming out, it's April 5th. Like, whatever. The way they've played is the way they've played. It hasn't looked great. But ultimately, again, I'm not really going to make any big assumptions of the season until May, June. I mean, we've seen this from the Mariners, too, in years past. This is a pretty common thing. The offense looks pretty awful in April and then generally picks up in the summer. It's just, can it pick up enough to actually, you know, go to the playoffs? But from a fan perspective, Jesus, it was an awful opening week. They were lucky to be 3-4. They could easily be 1-6. They're genuinely lucky to have 3 wins, and that is really saying something. They went 2-2 in March in that 4-game series against the Red Sox, whatever. That was just kind of an ugly series that they were lucky to win two games. They definitely won one of them, but they just didn't look great. One of my keys to success in my preview podcast was a strong April. So that 500 record in March, that doesn't really count. But so far they're 1-2 in April, which isn't good. They're lucky to have those three wins. From a purely fan perspective, vibes are on the absolute floor right now, but I'm not panicking. It's been seven games. I'm not going to panic, especially just because, like, the Astros are 2-5. You know, that's fun. The Angels are in first in the division. That's also fun. I don't know. It's just been bad. Like, the on-field play, the offense has been bad. There's no other way to put it. They have the lowest team OPS in the league after seven games with a 550. Pretty awful. The only real good contributors on offense so far have been 2024 reclamation candidate Ty France, who I felt like I sponsored a bill to send to the government to bring Ty France back from the dead. He's looked pretty solid. And then Mitch Haniger had the first home run of the Mariners season, which felt poetic, and we all should have seen that one coming. That was an amazing moment to not only see him back in a Mariners uniform, but to hit the first home run of the season for this team. That was pretty awesome. Just a really refreshing sight to see him back in a Mariners uniform. Whatever he does this year on the field is whatever. I'm okay with appeasing the fans like this, and it appeases me. I really enjoy seeing Mitch back in a Mariners uniform. The starting rotation is fine. Kirby just got absolutely shelled by the Guardians yesterday. As much as you can get, quote, shelled by a team that just slaps the ball around and doesn't hit the ball hard. I'm not taking a whole lot away from, again, even like I theoretically, it's like two starts and I can start looking at velocities and comparing it to last year. But all that stuff, it's, if you're going to compare velocities and spin and stuff like that, you got to at least compare it to the guys in April last year. If you're looking at Luis Castillo's velocity, it's down like a tick this year so far in his fastball. But you got to compare that to what it looked like in April last year, because generally guys will throw harder as the weather gets warmer, as the ball, like, guys will hit for more power as the weather gets warmer. That's just how it goes. April in Seattle in baseball is just a weird situation. It's like the baseball in the Northeast too. It's generally just kind of wacky because the weather's so cold. These guys go from playing in Florida and Arizona to going back to cold weather, and I feel like there's just an adjustment period when the year starts. And the Mariners are starting the year at home for a week too, so it can't be super helpful. Like, the Rockies never try to start at home really at all. They try to start on the road pretty healthily so they don't have an immediate Coors hangover effect when they go on their first road trip of the year. They try to just get it out of the way after they've been playing in Florida. Do they play in Florida? I think Florida. But the bullpen has looked good and pretty expected, I would say, so far without Brash and Santos in there. Munoz looks great. His stuff is looking great. I think especially with the bullpen guys, you can look at stuff rather than raw stats, especially for a few months because the sample's so small. Munoz's stuff looks great. All of the newer guys can really spin the ball. I guess Thornton is kind of in there, even though we saw him last year. But like Cody Bolton and like Austin Voth is new to the team. Like Colin Snyder, Ryan Stanek, again, new to the team, but we've seen him before. All these guys can really spin it. Like Cody Bolton and Colin Snyder both can sweep the hell out of the ball. Same with Trent Thornton. It's just kind of fitting the mold of what the Mariners do and want to do with their relief arms. So I think that's been encouraging. I think the bullpen looks good enough with the starting pitching to tread water until they get Brash and Santos back. And then just looking out into the future with Stanek, Munoz, Brash, and Santos all healthy, knock on wood, all fully healthy at the same time, that is a really, really solid group of four, with the rest of the guys fine and solid, and I trust what the Mariners can do with them. The defense has been bad, and that is worrying me a little bit. That has me worried for the long term this year, is the defense. The third base defense in particular has been very poor, especially because it looks way worse because, A, you shipped out a Gold Glove caliber defender at third base, and you B, you didn't sign Matt Chapman, a premium defensive third baseman, so it looks that much worse in that context. That is a little worrisome. There's been some tough miscues and errors from like almost everyone, but the third bases look particularly bad. I just wonder, the pitching and the ballpark factor play together in Seattle, obviously, but a huge part of, well, I guess not a huge part, a good aspect of why the Mariners' pitching has been so good, and their peripherals too have looked good along with the raw stats past couple years, is not only that they're great pitchers, they are great pitchers, but the defense has been great. And you see it in the Kirby start yesterday, is he not only had batted ball luck, like he wasn't really pitching that bad. He was doing his thing. He was throwing fastballs and stuff on the shadow zone. The Guardians were just slapping the ball around. They had some batted ball luck. They had some bloop singles. But they also got a couple gifts from the defense. They had some pass balls with Sebi Savala, who's not a particularly good blocker, which was something I highlighted in the preview episode. He was not a well-rounded defender blocking-wise. You take blocking out of it, good framer, can throw guys out. But blocking, and then like Polanco had an error in that game too. That was pretty crucial, scored a run. I mean, it's just going to make, I don't know. I'm intrigued to see if the defense is bad all year, what it does to the ERAs compared to the FIPs, compared to the Sierras, compared to the XFIP, whatever. That is worrisome, because I don't know. Perry Hill, hopefully with a whole year working with guys like Polanco and the newer guys like Polanco and Urias and Rojas in the infield, hopefully they'll be fine over the whole year. But we've been treated to really solid defense from this team for the past few years now, and I'm just worried it's going to slip this year. We made the Red Sox pitchers look awesome. I don't think their staff is bad. I think they're fine. I don't think they're amazing. They all can spin the ball really well, though. It's interesting. We face two teams who can, Jerry DePoto said this, we face two teams who can spin the ball exceptionally, which, listen, most pitchers in Major League Baseball can do that. But the Red Sox plan of attack, a lot of off-speed stuff and cutters, and it worked. And then the Guardians, that is kind of their mold anyway. I don't think that was their specific plan of attack against the Mariners, because they're generally like, they have just guys who have weaker fastballs and really good spin and off-speed stuff. So it's just a particularly bad matchup for the Mariners offense. And that is less than encouraging. Again, we're only a week in, but similar issues to last year of not being able to hit breaking balls have manifested itself this year. It's not great. They're chasing a lot. They're not hitting them solidly enough. They're doing decent damage on the fastball, but like, again, you gotta be able to either hit or lay off the off-speed stuff. And it was so clear the plan of attack in the Red Sox series was cutters, sliders, sweepers, change-ups, sinkers, way less four-seam stuff. And that Red Sox staff, maybe, after watching them, could be better than I thought this year. I still think they're without an ace, but I feel like the overall five is like all made up of solid pitchers, so that's fun. The Red Sox offense is much less scary without Devers in it. He missed two games of that series, the middle two, and that offense looked, it was just less menacing without him in it, like way less, which is, I guess, to be expected. He's their best hitter, but it's a lot more just threat of a young guy doing something rather than, like, you know, Devers is going to do something. Like in the first game of the year, Devers took a ball to the backside out into the pen for a long home run, very impressive home run. He's so powerful. What else? What else happened this week? I don't want to focus on two. I mean, Logan Gilbert's looked nasty. Emerson Hancock's first start this season was solid. Went like 5.5 1/3. Got outs. Stuff looked pretty good. That changeup, I mean, he's going to lean on that changeup a lot when he pitches this year. And I don't have a problem with it. It's a really good pitch. I don't know. The guys have just been hit around except for Gilbert so far. But we're just seven games in. What else? Again, they're just not off to a great start at the plate. I need Polanco and JP and Julio to hit the ball a little bit better, but maybe they won't until May because April was futile. Just, I hate playing the Guardians. I really do. I tweeted a lot about why it was a particularly bad matchup for George Kirby, but I also just hate playing them. It's just really good pitching, solid defense, being annoying as hell on offense. And it's interesting. I talked specifically about this problem with George Kirby in my preview podcast, about he's less whiff-reliant than the rest of our guys. Like, you compare him to the average pitcher, or you can just compare him to what we have in-house with Luis Castillo and Logan Gilbert and Bryce Miller and Brian Wu. And those guys all rely on missing bats quite a bit, and that's a good strategy. And Kirby does miss bats. He's not bad at striking guys out, but he's not elite at it because he's so good at living in the shadow zone, which is just the edges of the strike zone, with his pretty good stuff. And not walking guys, not giving away cheap base runners, and getting a lot of soft contact and relying on batted ball quality and luck. And you saw it in the Guardians game where he gave up 20 batted balls, and I think six of them were over 93 miles an hour. I think four of them were 95 plus, which is a hard hit. But there were two that were like 94.6 and then 94. So I'll just lump those in. Six out of the 20 were 93 plus mile an hour hits or batted balls. And he gave up 10 hits and 8 runs. That is supremely bad luck mixed with some poor defense against a team that runs the bases pretty well too. And that's just what can happen. Like, I think George was more of a risky Cy Young candidate just because he doesn't rely as much on the strikeouts. I think he's still a great pitcher. It's just he's going to have some games where he gets pretty unlucky with batted balls. And I feel like he's the perfect candidate to have a ERA where you're like, oh, that doesn't look right for George Kirby. And then you look at the FIP and the XFIP and even like the expected ERA and Sierra, all the peripheral ERA numbers, and they're like a point lower than his ERA. I feel like he's the perfect candidate to have that happen this year just because he relies so much on the batted balls and batted ball quality and just where the ball falls and good defense. So we'll see. I feel like, dare I say, he was too reliant on strikes against the Guardians. They're just a supremely terrible example because they just don't whiff. Like, if George is going to walk any team a lot, it should be the Guardians. He just refuses to walk anyone, but I feel like he should have thrown some more balls in that game, maybe. I don't know. It's just a bad matchup for him. But I don't know. The game goes differently. In a parallel universe, he gives up the same batted balls and the same hard hits, 4 out of the 20, and he gives up 4 hits, 2 runs, strikes out like 3, but goes, you know, 6 innings because the batted balls are all going to fielders. That could have easily happened too. So just interesting and tough start to the year for him. But I think he knows that he's not in supreme trouble right now. So that was I don't really want to focus too much else on the on-field product yet. It's just been really shitty and I'm hoping they pick it up soon. I said a strong April is needed from this team and I still believe that. And I hope the offense can pick up soon. I mean, we know like Polanco, Julio, JP, even Cal are not going to be this bad at the plate. Very small sample. I think they're going to be better, but they're lucky to be 3-4. I'll say it again. They're lucky to be 3-4. And they just have tough matchups. They go to Milwaukee the day you're listening to this on Friday. They go to Milwaukee. That's a good staff and a good bullpen. They go to Toronto. That's a good staff and a good bullpen. And then they're at home for Chicago and the Reds. And then they get a brief respite going to Colorado, which maybe that's the series. They go to Colorado. Everyone rakes and they come back just cooking. But it's going to be a tough month. And we know this. And I'm just so sick and tired of April being an awful month for the Mariners. But it always is. It always feels like it is. And I'm going to blame the environment. I had a question here in my notes My question is, Marine Layer? Or are the hitters just not hitting the ball hard enough? Because in the first seven games of the year, and this happens often, I feel like the Mariners' fly balls don't travel as far as the opposing team's fly balls. That's just the vibe that I get, that I feel like a lot of other people get, where it's like, oh, of course that one goes over the fence for the opposing team, but our guy, it's like, oh, that's gone. No, it's a warning track out because of the environment. And I think that's a little bit of, I don't know, I just think that's kind of bullshit. I think that's our minds playing tricks on us a little bit. And I think it's just our hitters not really hitting the ball hard enough. Maybe the opposing team's hitters are just better. That could be a thing. There's a certain amount of offensive output you can attribute to the Marine Layer and it being cold outside. There's numbers to back this up. The offense and like pitcher velocities, again, don't peak until like July, late July and August when it's the warmest outside. It makes sense. But there's also a good amount that you can attribute to just getting good hitters. And that's a big part of being a good offense. Like if the Mariners had better hitters, I think they'd be better offensively in April. And that's not rocket science. And you'd think the people upstairs would know about this, but they don't. They're like, oh, good hitters. Never heard of her. But that's it. I'm done talking about the on-field stuff. I have a lot more stuff to talk about, particularly the salmon run. I gotta talk about the salmon run. The salmon run, you have to know what it is if you're a Mariners fan by now. If you've been to a game already, which I haven't, I don't live in Seattle, but they're doing a new thing akin to the Washington Nationals President's Run or the Milwaukee Brewers. I think it's just sausage run. I think they have sausages run. The Mariners are doing the same thing, but with salmon. It makes sense. I saw some people hating on this because it's like, oh, we're just taking from another, we're taking from other teams, you know, like it's just copying. It's not copying. It's just taking and applying it to the Mariners. Like it's just making it a Mariners-themed race around the warning track, and it's supposed to be fun. And I think it is really fun. I don't know why you'd have a problem with that. Who cares if we take something and tweak it to fit the Mariners brand? Like, why is that a bad thing? It's not like it's cheating. It's just a promotion. Like, that happens all the time. But I like it. I think it's great. The only thing that I don't think is great is they're apparently getting rid of the hydroplane race, which is like a staple of my childhood. It's one of the biggest things I remember about going to Mariners games as a kid. Sometimes on-field play I remember as a kid, but let's be honest. As a kid, you're thinking about a kettle corn, a hot dog, a soda, some Dippin' Dots, some alien ice cream, and a helmet. You're thinking about the hydroplane race, the hat trick. Like that's the stuff you're thinking of, and that's a formative memory of my childhood. And I don't care that I don't care for the fact that they're getting rid of this. Why not have the salmon run and the hydroplane race? Why you got to get rid of it? So it's like, it's great news about this salmon run. I think it's fun, but at what cost, you know? And they have backstories on all four of these salmon, though. And I will say, rip to the hydroplane race. RIP. It's sad that it's off and it's going. But I guess at least it's replacing it with something fun. I will not tolerate salmon run slander. But the Mariners on their website have a whole section talking about the salmon run. Obviously, salmon is a huge part of the nature of the Pacific Northwest. They're a big part of the culture of the indigenous people of the Pacific Northwest as well. And they're, if you've lived in Seattle at all, you know, you've probably eaten salmon. There's a lot of salmon up there. It's great. And the salmon run, what's fun is when I heard this, I was like, this is a fun race. But like, what if they simulated a real salmon run? Because usually the salmon dies at the end of a salmon run. They lay eggs and then they die. But they have these four salmon who are running in this race, the Mariners do, and they have bios for all of them. So I'm just going to read them here because I think this is really fun. There's the king salmon, obviously the king or Chinook salmon. He's the biggest, fastest, and strongest, which feels unfair. Fun fact, loves King Felix. There's the sockeye salmon, which is the grunge salmon, apparently. He wears a cape. Not a cape, Jesus. The King Salmon wears a King Felix type cape. The Sockeye wears a flannel because he's tough, scrappy, and creative. Fun fact. Stand for Mudhoney, Stone Temple Pilots, Soundgarden. Stand for Mudhoney, Stone Temple Pilots. Yeah. So he likes grunge music. His win song is Man in the Box by Alice in Chains, so that's fun. And then there's the Silver Salmon, or the Silver / Coho Salmon, known as the Smart Salmon. This salmon appears to be wearing glasses and a headset. Averages 18 and a half hours of screen time per day. So it seems kind of like a tech expert, a little Microsoft themed, I guess. And then there's Humpy, which is the best one by far. The absolute fan favorite has to be Humpy. Not only because his name is Humpy, because he's never won the race. That's his fun fact. The Mariners concocted this new race of salmon running around in the warning track. And they're like, hey, what if we had one that's just there to have a good time and not win at all? The species is a pink or a humpback salmon, which is one of the coolest looking salmon, I gotta say. And this guy's wearing a life jacket and like a floaty, which because they say in this preview or this description and our final fish, although we aren't sure that it can swim, we're excited to introduce you to the lovable Humpy Salmon. So this is the fan favorite. You just go, aw, when he doesn't win the race. He doesn't have any advantages. There's the advantages section of this website. It says NA. So he has no advantages and he doesn't win. His win song is called the Humpty Dance, which could certainly get problematic, but I demand to hear the Humpty Dance. He has to win at some point, right? Like, they're not going to go the whole year without him winning. Like, that's his whole shtick, but I feel like you got to have him win a couple times. I feel like there's people out there betting on this, and they're betting Humpty plus 10,000 every race. Like, come on, this is the race. This is the one. But I really like this. It's fun. I don't know why you'd hit on this. Like, this is... I skew silliness is good, and happiness and silliness in baseball is good. I think there's definitely, you can definitely overstep and make things too silly for just the sake of being silly. But I think this is fun. It connects with the city, and ultimately, like, this is predominantly probably for the children in the audience. And I'm sure as a kid, I would have loved this. I'm sure kids in the stands do love it. I haven't been to a Mariners game in a while. I don't live there, but I kind of want to go back just to see the salmon run and mourn the loss of the hydroplane race. But the Sockeye Salmon so far in the five races they've had is an absolute problem. He has four wins, and the next one is the King with one win, Silver with zero, and obviously Humpy with zero as well. Humpy... Man, will Humpy ever win? That's really the question. But the Sockeye, the grunge salmon with this flannel, is an absolute problem. Tough, scrappy, and creative. You gotta wonder, the King Salmon with just one win, although being the biggest, fastest, and strongest, King Salmon underperforming so far this year, I will say, in the salmon run. I think it's going to be a monumental day when Humpy wins, and I hope it's celebrated as such. If you're at the game where Humpy wins, you got to frame that ticket. This reminds me, the Sounders came out with a thing a while back. It was an elevator race, and there was a fun bit, like the gold elevator never won, and then at the end of the season, it finally won, and everyone went absolutely crazy. When Humpy wins, burn T-Mobile to the ground when Humpy wins. It's going to be a party. I had to talk about this. I had to talk about the Salmon Run / mourn the loss of the hydroplane race. It had to be done. I will be keeping up with the standings of the salmon race, and I kind of want to take, not bets, but I kind of just want to guess throughout the season who's going to win all the races, because what, there's 80, what? What's how many home games to baseball teams play? Some quick math, 162 divided by 2, 81. So there's 81 races, theoretically, or no, they didn't do two at the start, so there's 79 races maybe throughout the year. I am excited. I'm excited to see what happens, and I will be keeping up with the Salmon Run on this podcast. And now, I will transition into non-Mariners-related topics after talking about the Salmon Run. Without further ado, I have to talk about the jerseys. I have to do it. When these debuted, and the outrage on the internet was at its height when pitchers and catchers were reporting and everyone was talking about it. I did talk about it a little bit, but I did want to save a lot of stuff for the season because, I don't know, I mean, either they were going to change them going into the season, which was doubtful for sure, and they haven't changed them, but I wanted to see them, like, on TV, on, like, legitimate MLB broadcasts, because spring training broadcasts and just photos from the clubhouse, I want to see them under the bright lights of stadiums and when guys are really sweating and stuff, and boy, they look awful. They look just as bad. The jersey nameplates look terrible on the field. They look worse than in spring training because the cameras are farther away. And when action is happening, I generally know most MLB players by their face or their gait when they're running. But some games I've watched this opening day week, I'm like, who is that? And I'm like squinting to try to see the name on the back of their jersey, and I just can't. Not to mention it looks awful. It really does look bad on the field. The rest of the jersey is like fine from afar. Up close, doesn't look great. The nameplate doesn't look good from anywhere. The Yankees were sweating through their gray uniforms. That looked bad. I think Carlos Rodon legit changed his uniform halfway through his start. He was soaked. It was a completely different shade of gray. And then he came back out the next inning, and it looked normal again. He definitely put on a different top. When the camera is close, you can see through the pants so easily. Even my girlfriend, we were watching the Mariners game. She was like, why can I see that guy's underwear? And she was talking about Cal Raleigh, first of all. And I was like, look away. Don't get entranced by Big Dumper. All right? I don't want to stay in this relationship. But she was like, why can I see his underwear? I'm like, Michael Rubin, that's why. A man who needs to go to The Hague for his crimes of what he's done this year. What is this? And on top of the jersey looking terrible on the field, which for one is really bad. Like, genuinely, it's a huge part of the game is looking aesthetically cool and nice, because baseball is a cool sport. And when guys are just standing around, at the very least, you could have them looking cool. And the stitched jerseys with the big nameplates on the back are just, in general, I like most baseball jerseys. I think most of them look good, especially on the field. And these ones look awful. And yeah, on top of them just looking like shit, the Sunday cream Mariners jerseys did not debut last Sunday, and it doesn't sound like they will for at least like a couple weeks to a month, to maybe to June. They didn't debut because they don't have them. People were pointing this out, and I didn't even realize until I saw someone point it out on Twitter. On Sunday, they didn't wear them. I think, what did they wear on Sunday? The teal or that? They wore the teal or the white on Sunday. And I didn't even notice. I'm not in midseason form. I didn't notice that they weren't wearing the Sunday creams despite owning that jersey, and it's my favorite Mariners jersey. Someone tweeted at the Mariners, and the Mariners Twitter account replied and said, quote, they have not been delivered. So, what the fuck? They haven't been delivered? Fanatics knows when the season begins. That jersey is a staple of the Mariners and has been on Sunday home games for the past, well, how long have those jerseys been around? 4 or 5 years now? It's been a while. 6 years even? This is apparently the same thing. The Cardinals Baby Blues, which is another one of the best jerseys in sports. At least top 10 jersey in baseball. Maybe top 5 for me. Those haven't been delivered yet either, and the Cardinals might not be able to wear those until May or June. Fuck you, Fanatics. What are you doing? Again, you knew when the season was starting. How have you not delivered all of the team's jerseys yet? It's this, and then the fact that you can't adjust the pants anymore. Like, there's hard, like, stop, like, sizes. Like, guys used to be able to adjust them personally for them, and now they can't. Man, Michael Rubin, again, if I saw him in the street, would I commit assault? I'm going to say no, but I think I'd give him a piece of my mind. Like, what they've done to the jerseys is awful. It genuinely does, and I think MLB should be and probably is a little worried about this. Like, the general customer experience, which is a fan watching a baseball game, either on TV or in person, I haven't seen him in person yet. A big part of it is the aesthetics, like I talked about, and this generally takes away from my enjoyable watching experience of baseball. It's really bad. And with the jerseys that have the sponsors on the sleeve, it makes it look even worse because it makes it really look like a giveaway. Like, these couldn't look more like a giveaway jersey than they do this year. Because if you've all gotten a giveaway, I remember specifically, and I think I have it somewhere, I have an Ichiro jersey that was a giveaway jersey. It's two sizes too big, first of all. But the name is, it's printed on, it's not stitched on, and it's kind of see-through. It looks almost exactly like the jerseys in the 2024 season. Fanatics has ruined it. Fanatics has been going downhill for years. They did the classic thing. They basically became a monopoly, and all the sports leagues partnered with them, somewhat had to partner with them, and once they got that and got all these contracts and were making more money than ever, what are you going to do in that point? Are you going to improve your product? No, you're going to try to squeeze as much profit out of this as possible. You're going to lean out your supply chain and you're going to make the products worse. And it's so evident. There's a Twitter account that's Fanatics Sucks or something that documents people who get these orders from Fanatics in the mail. And it's stuff that's misprinted with a different team name or team colors, or the logo is like completely off center where it's supposed to be. It's clear they have either a quality control problem, or they genuinely don't care about quality control because they kind of have a monopoly. It sucks. It really, again, is detracting from my viewing experience. I will implore people always, I did before this and I will continue to, especially now, do not buy from Fanatics. Don't even buy from like the local team. I mean, if you're going to get a jersey, at least buy like last year's or something. But go, like, if you're getting Seattle stuff, buy from Simply Seattle or just a local place, because giving money to Fanatics, you can't do it just on principle. They suck. They've ruined the jerseys. And we're going to see some junk, I feel like, this year. We're going to see some junk. Some baseball junk on live television, and MLB will have to answer for that. Oh, God, that was my jersey rant. I was waiting until the season started. I was going to give them benefit of the doubt and be like, maybe they'll look better. And they haven't. They look terrible. They still continue to look awful. Anyways, that is my rant on Fanatics, and Michael Rubin should be treated like a war criminal. Moving on to just random thoughts throughout the week, because that one was very directed and not random at all, really. My first random thought of the week, and this came from opening day, I wrote down the Rockies, man. Just, what are they cooking over there in Colorado? This is after watching them give up 14 runs in one inning on opening day. Well, I'm sure the fans blissfully drank beer and enjoyed themselves, because that's what those fans do. I commend them for it. But the Rockies, that's what I wrote down. Just absurd. On opening day, you give up 14 runs in one inning. So bad. Who else? What else did I write down? Oh, I wrote down a couple names. One of them is Mookie Betts, because what he's done in this first week is absurd. Not only showcasing that he is still that dude, the Dodgers are scary, but also that whole, just, good God, it's fun when a guy is hot to start the season, because the numbers that you can get from this first couple weeks of the season when a guy is scorching is phenomenal. And he right now is slashing, let's see here, 485, 595, 1,091 slugging. That's good for a 1,686 OPS. That is a 337 OPS plus. So if you're doing the numbers, 237% better than league average right now, OPS wise. He has hit 5 home runs. I think that's more than the Mariners have hit. I feel like he probably has more extra base hits than the Mariners have hit this year too. I haven't fact checked that. That's just a hunch. He struck out 4 times and 42 at bats. Walked 9 times. I don't think he has swung and missed at a ball in the zone yet this season, at least as of, I think, Wednesday. I think someone tweeted that out. That's ridiculous. Teoscar Hernandez has hit four home runs already on the season. That was the most expected thing possible, is that Teoscar's probably going to put up a Blue Jays Teoscar season. He's probably going to end with 30 home runs, 130 WRC plus. I mean, we saw this one coming. Other Dodgers stuff, I mean, I will say I'm not going to touch on the Shohei gambling stuff at all until the investigation's done. It's just, it's messy. More people know about more facts than me. I have my opinions. I don't want to bother getting into that mess on this show. But Shohei just hit his first home run as a Dodger last night. And the girl who caught it, some stuff has came out today that, she got like a signed baseball and bat and like some hats, I think. But apparently the guy, she said that they separated her from her husband, the people who were like going to authenticate the ball. I guess the ushers probably do that, or there's designated people, and like pressured her to take a quick deal that wasn't very lucrative. She tweeted out that she didn't want much and she was like fine with what they gave her. But then, so Sam Blum was covering this and he said that the team and was like, yeah, we gave her this stuff. And Shohei was like, yeah, I'm glad we could get her some signed gear. And Shohei apparently said that they met with her, Shohei and co. And she said they did not meet with her, which I'm inclined to believe her. Why would she lie about that? So apparently the Dodgers not only threatened her to take a quick and easy deal to get that ball and refused to authenticate it initially, apparently. Shohei then lied and said that they met her and didn't. Like, what is going on in the Dodgers camp, especially with Shohei Ohtani? Shohei Ohtani's PR team has been working overtime for all of this month, March and April so far. Tough for them. This has been awful. That was just a weird little thing that came out like an hour before I started recording. Very weird. But the other LA team currently in first in the AL West, the Angels of Los Angeles, but not really. Mike Trout, boy, he looks like Mike Trout. Not great to hear as a Mariners fan, but from just, I love baseball and I love when Mike Trout is cooking, because I feel like we've forgotten how amazing he can be. And if he just, like, he should be an MVP favorite, to be quite honest. The only thing holding him back is injury, and you can't factor that into a season. Like, he could just play 150 games this year. You never know. He probably won't, but he started off the year scorching, while Anthony Rendon has started off the year hitless. Anthony Rendon is 0 of 19 to start the year. He has a walk and one run and 5 strikeouts in 20 plate appearances. He has a negative 84 OPS plus to start the year. He's been leading off for them, oddly. I don't think he is anymore, but he did on opening day. He was the first at bat of the 2024 season, which is hilarious. He has 0 hits. I think he hasn't gotten a hit in 3 calendar years, I believe, is something like that. Like, since 2021, he hasn't gotten a hit or something crazy like that. That's pretty hilarious. He, again, continues to be disinterested in being good at baseball. A couple more things before we get out, and it's going to be a shorter show compared to the preview episodes, obviously. The Yankees Twitter account, either on opening day or the day after, they tweeted a sponsored betting post. Like, it was like a home run ticket, like plus 300 or something from BetMGM, I believe. No, absolutely not. I will not have that. Teams should not be allowed to do that. I haven't talked a lot about the gambling in sports and baseball, but I think we're reaching a point, and everyone else is realizing that as more and more stuff comes out about people betting, like betting scandals in the NBA, NFL, baseball now, with the biggest star in baseball, it's getting out of hand. And if teams are going to tweet that, if you bet on Aaron Judge over half a home run for plus 250 today, cash it in, we cannot have that. That should be against the rules. Everything else is going to be sponsored by gambling. Please, teams should not be allowed to tweet that shit out. That's awful. That hit the timeline and everyone shamed it immediately. Thank God. And I like betting on sports. I have bet on sports since college, and I'm not going to confirm if that has been legal or not, but The point is, we're too saturated with sports betting now. It's everywhere. It exploded. Teams realize how much money there is in it, and now they're shoving it down our throats. And I like it, and I think it's way too much. Especially seeing all the scandals coming out about people betting on their own team or their own sport, or using an illegal bookie through an interpreter to put down millions of dollars and lose them. It needs to be scaled back. But that tweet was awful. I had to talk about it. That tweet was terrible. We'll see. I can't imagine it's going to get better, because in the endless pursuit of profit from these mega corporations of sports teams and betting companies, I can't imagine they're going to slow down because people are complaining about it. It's too much. It's too in your face now. It's the Shohei Ohtani coverage has been absurd, because like Ken Rosenthal has been talking about it on MLB Network as a Chiron below him is like brought to you by BetMGM. It's like, all right, can we take a step back and just look at how ridiculous this is for a second? Ugh, awful. Okay, and the last thing I'm going to talk about on this episode is the Oakland Athletics. First of all, their Twitter account turned off replies. Absolutely cowardly move by the Oakland A's. I don't know if this was a decision made by their like social manager, coordinator, or whatever. I feel like this could have been from down high, where it's like, hey, we just don't want the negative sentiment because we know all the comments are going to be negative because we're ripping this team away from the fans. It's just cowardice, and it's embarrassing. And what came out today in the past couple days is their official, like, the move is all but official, and now they just figured out they're going to play in Sacramento at a stadium that holds like 12,000 fans and probably doesn't have the proper clubhouse facilities or family care stuff or workout facilities that you need to be an actual Major League Baseball stadium. Like, having a small stadium for the A's is not necessarily a bad thing. Because they don't get that many fans to begin with. It's the fact that they're moving completely out of the city, for one, and to a stadium that, like, despite the Coliseum being in really poor shape, it has an adequate, like, press box and clubhouse facilities enough to support major league teams coming in and out. And there's big concerns that this Sacramento park doesn't have that. And it's really sad. They've turned off the comments. All that they're saying is we're moving to Vegas. They're not even using the Sacramento name, apparently. Like, they're just going to be the Athletics, not the Sacramento Athletics, which is crazy. Like, you could at least try to endear yourselves to the Sacramento fans by using the city's name for a few years, but they're not even doing that. This entire thing is so embarrassing for Major League Baseball. The fact that Manfred and MLB and all of the owners are just okay with what's going on is embarrassing and frankly awful. Every day I feel more sad for Oakland A's fans and Oakland people in general. They've had the Warriors ripped from them and moved to San Francisco. They had the Raiders ripped from them, and now they're getting the A's ripped from them. In a swift move that hasn't even been well coordinated. It's like, no, we're just going to get out. We're going to make this product as worse as we possibly can, as terrible as it possibly can be, and an excuse to move to make our owner and ownership group slightly more money. For a guy who's a billionaire already, he's going to make a couple millions more maybe on this. Like, it's marginal to him at that point, but it doesn't matter. This is all for greed. That's the entire point of this. And it's just a shame that Major League Baseball is standing by and letting this happen. And all the other owners, because all the other owners would do this too. Like, we just saw the city of Kansas City deny a resolution that would have given taxpayer money to build a new Chiefs and Royals stadium. And both owners are like, oh man, we might have to move if you guys don't give us the money to build half the stadiums. Owners shouldn't be allowed to do this. Like, these teams mean something to people, especially in Oakland. It would be one thing if you're moving the Rays, and while the Rays have been really good in the 21st century as a pretty new team, they don't have a ton of history. And I'm not saying they should move the Rays. They shouldn't. They have a good fan base, despite what people think. The Oakland A's are one of the more storied franchises in Major League Baseball. In a sport of storied franchises, they have a deep history in Oakland of baseball, and it's a shame that they're going to be removed. And it would be one thing to move the team to Vegas and have this all buttoned up nicely and the move goes smoothly, but every step of the way has been awful and embarrassing and clearly not well thought out. They're just trying to get out of there as quick as they possibly can. And now they're going to go play in Sacramento to maybe till 2029 while the stadium is being built in Las Vegas. It's just embarrassing and awful. And the cherry on top is turning off the replies in your Twitter. That is such cowardice. That is so, so embarrassing and shambolic. It just sucks. But that was the last thing I was going to talk about today. I will be back next week, probably. I'm still figuring out what the cadence for these podcasts is going to be throughout the season this year. I might do weekly Fridays. I might do every other Friday. I might just play it by ear depending on what happens that week. But definitely for these first few in April and the beginning of May, it's going to be less of a here's what the team should do to be better and more like, man, what's happening? What are the vibes? And then once I get a good baseline for stats, I'll start throwing numbers at you. But I appreciate you listening this far. I'm going to wrap it here. Thank you for listening. First podcast of the season. Mariners, please start hitting better so my mental health can get a little bump, because they need to have a good April. And I'm just tired of the team being so shitty in April that they need to make up for it by winning 15 in a row in August. You know, I'm just tired of it. Can we be on top of the division by the end of April? I hope so. Offense, please pick up. Julio, please save us. But thank you for listening. Really appreciate it. I will be back next week. Hope you have a good rest of the week. And of course, go Mariners.